This is Citizens Council Forum, America's number one public affairs program, where prominent Americans report to the nation on important issues. This week, the series of discussions is presented coast to coast by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, with the cooperation of public-spirited broadcasters who share our belief that Americans must be informed to remain free. Now, from Washington, here is the producer of Citizens Council Forum, Dick Morphew.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Citizens Council Forum. We're fortunate to have as our guest today a gentleman who has distinguished himself in many fields. He is Mr. Carlton Putnam, an attorney, scholar, and leader in the aviation industry, who in the past few years has won wide recognition as an author, first for his biography of Theodore Roosevelt, and more recently for his scholarly handling of the race question in a bestseller entitled Race and Reason, A Yankee View. Mr. Putnam, delighted to have you with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Nick.
I'd like to ask you this question first, Mr. Putnam. You're a native of New England, a graduate of Princeton, and a law graduate of Columbia University. What accounts for your interest in this problem? Why did you write the book Race and Reason?
Well, initially, I think the book was written as a spontaneous expression of indignation at the attitude of the North towards what seemed to me a very natural position on the part of the South. Mm-hmm. From that, it grew into a wider understanding of the issues and finally led to realization on my part of what I would call were the fundamental difficulty with which the country is confronted.
What is the underlying cause of the race problem in this country today?
We all will concede that the Supreme Court decision of 1954 was the beginning of our present difficulty. Mm-hmm. I would like to push the beginning just a little further back and say that the decision of the Supreme Court was, I think, based, as it usually is in the long run, on public opinion. That public opinion in the North in this situation is thoroughly convinced that the attitude of the South towards the Negro is in every way unjustified. That the racial differences that exist between the white and the Negro races are based entirely upon environmental limitations and handicaps which the Negro race has suffered.
How did these erroneous ideas get started, Mr. Putnam?
That idea, that distinction between an environmental basis for the difference between the white and the Negro race, which would lead itself to the natural attitude that we must do something about the environment and we owe it to the Negro to change that environment and that will solve our problem, rather than on a genetic, fundamental, innate difference, goes back to a story which started in this country with the beginning of anthropology in the United States. The trouble traces to a professor by the name of Franz Boas, who was the founder of American anthropology. He had the same position that Lysenko had in Russia, that all racial differences are environmental, that they are not due to any innate limitations. Now, this communist philosophy in Europe was a sort of an axis with Boas' socialist attitude in the United States. I'm not saying that Boas was a communist. We don't know just exactly what his view is, but his own biographer, but his own biographer, Herskovitz, has been frank enough to state that fundamentally his ideology was socialistic, that he was a socialist of that era. Now, Boas began his career at Columbia with, he had a very forceful personality, and he believed that the solution to all the world's problems was to equate all the races, and he flavored his scientific teaching with that political slant. Here was this prolonged period. This man was professor and head of the Department of Anthropology at Columbia for something like 37 years. A generation and a half or two generations of students. He had his followers, he had young professors schooled under him. They went out to other universities. The science had just beginning in America in those days. They finally got positions in key universities throughout the country. Practically two generations now of Americans have heard no other side to this question, really, than this. All I would ask is that the time has come to look at the influence which Boas had on this science, to examine his evidence, and now to re-educate public opinion on the basis of the facts rather than on the basis of Boas' slanted anthropological doctrines. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking anyone to take this subject or this point of view of mine on just on my say-so. I would like to have them examine the facts. Now you will say, well, it's difficult for a non-scientific mind to examine facts of this kind. We say the balance of scientific opinion is on this side, and that's as far as we can go. I question whether the balance of scientific opinion in this field can be decided by counting noses in anthropological societies. You have to examine first why people who take a certain position take it, from the standpoint of are they influenced or not by fear of loss of a job or status. And then you have to some extent, look at the facts for yourself. I've done both. Now, I have a science degree, but I'm not a scientist. However, I think I have a reasonable amount of common sense, and I challenge anybody with a reasonable amount of common sense to read the Boas Anthropology and to read the material, for instance, in the George Report, and on the basis of just ordinary good judgment, have any doubt as to where the truth lies.
Mr. Putnam, has the damage been done? Is it too late to correct these basic errors which started when the science of anthropology was first being developed in this country? Or can something be done to correct these false assumptions?
It will take time. You see, the mass media today in America has such control over the avenues of influence of public opinion that newspapers and radio and television stations and a few key college professors in this country could be persuaded to sit down and study the facts and then present it to the American public, you could change the situation in 6 months.
Did the equalitarian theories of Boas influence scientists in other countries as much as they did in the United States?
Another group that were very strongly influenced by the left-wing drift, or overdrift as I call it, which has been quite worldwide, as you know, has been UNESCO, for example, in the United Nations. They've just been honeycombed with the Boas philosophy. Their statements have been all keyed to it, although they've had some difficulty in getting many of our scientists who are on the other side, and there are quite a few, not to agree. I mean, to agree with it. And many of them have refused to and required it to be reworded. And if you read between the lines with some attention, you'll discover how they've changed it, these statements that they make. The English position in anthropology is somewhat like the American. It's a product of the leftist drift. I sometimes say that you can define a left-winger as one who believes in, and I don't mean to denigrate any genuine liberal by what I'm saying, but the left-winger who goes down the spectrum towards the socialistic position is one who believes in taking the money out of the pocket of the man who earned it and putting it into the pocket of the man who didn't. Now, of course, that has many exceptions. It has all rules of thumb. It has great limitations. But the same thing applies to a civilization. You can steal it subtly and put it into the hands of the person who didn't earn it or the race who didn't earn it. The leftist drift has been in that direction, not only from the standpoint of our, many ways, our economy, but also of our culture, and I think it's time we took a look at that.
Mr. Putnam, you mentioned the leftist drift. Can you give a specific example of what you mean by this?
Yes, I don't want to get into here, of course, the whole subject of our social and economic life in the field of all possible drifts in the direction of the left. But we now come to a little different phase of this subject, if I understand your question correctly. I spoke of the influence of public opinion having been the basis for the Supreme Court's decision. I'm quite sure that was the case. I'm quite sure that the Supreme Court was simply at long last reflecting the influence of the Boas School of Anthropology, which was the left-wing school of science, in this particular field, which is a facet of our total culture, and a very important one, if I may be permitted to say it, to say so. Now, here we have the decision, which is based upon Boas's assumption of innate equality, which requires only an improvement in environment to produce the millennium. Unfortunately, the facts are the contrary. However, I believe that not only was the entire North convinced of the innate equality of the races, but a great many people in the South were also persuaded of this assumption, this hypothesis. They were aided in that assumption by their desire to feel this in the interests of our general trend towards the left. I have absolutely no desire to block any humanitarian movement on behalf of the Negro, provided it doesn't destroy our civilization. And the only point where I feel that we must draw the line is where you have policies which lead, because of their very nature, to what I call social, as distinguished from other kinds of integration, and therefore are promoted, tend to promote amalgamation of the two races and a consequent decline in the amalgam which you get, which you invariably have.
In your opinion, Mr. Putnam, is there anything the South can and should do to counteract the 1954 Supreme Court decision on school integration?
I plead with the South, the next time you are confronted with federal force, to ask the federal government to suspend further action until a new case based upon new evidence can be heard by the Supreme Court.
Mr. Putnam, our time has gone by very quickly today. We'll be looking forward to continuing this discussion on next week's program. Tune in next week at the same time, when Carlton Putnam, businessman, attorney, and author of the bestseller Race and Reason, will be back with us. Till then, Dick Morphew speaking coast to coast, saying thanks a lot for being with us. So long, everybody.
Citizens Council Forum is dedicated to the preservation of our American tradition of freedom. If you agree that individual liberty and constitutional government must be preserved, if you want to do something positive and worthwhile to help protect our freedom, then we want to hear from you. Just write to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. We'll be happy to send you, without obligation, literature showing how you can help. Address your card or letter to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. America's number one public affairs series is presented coast to coast each week by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, assisted by a grant from the Mississippi State Sovereignty Commission, an official agency of the state of Mississippi. Join us next week for another informative discussion and remind your friends to tune in. It's time to take a stand. By working together, we can and will safeguard our freedom.